Job chapter 2, we're going to start in verse number 11 tonight and then go down to the end of chapter 3. So Job chapter 2, beginning with verse number 11. I've entitled the message tonight, Lamentation. And lamentation is a cry of sorrow and grief. It is an expression of grief, suffering, sadness, regret. I've got a whole bunch of definitions here. Another one, lamentation is a passionate expression of grief and sorrow. It is a public expression of feeling of sadness or disappointment about something. So lamentation is not necessarily a word that we would use a whole lot today, but it's a word that describes grief, sorrow, crying, and all of those kinds of emotions that go together. And here in this prelude to the book of Job, we find that both Job and his friends spend a week of lamentation, a week of mourning and crying and grieving. And I want us to look at that week of grieving that they had. And as we look at this opening scene in the book of Job, I want us to see, as Job suffers, that God gives us a look at this lamentation that we may be able to gain some insights for our own lives. Every one of us goes through times of grief and sorrow and hardship and difficulty. And Job and his friends give us some ideas here that can be a help to us. So first of all, notice in chapter 2, beginning with verse number 11, that Job's three friends come to see him. Now, as we begin with this, Job's three friends, when you think of Job's three friends, the first thing that comes to our mind is bad guys. They weren't very nice. But in actuality, when they first got there, they were exemplary in their comfort to Job. And we see that in these first three verses here we're going to look at here tonight. They were very good comforters to him. Verse number 11, it says, "Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that was come upon him, they came everyone from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite, for they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him." So they first come together. They come to share his grief. And they lament over him compassionately. These three men here, they joined together. They were obviously friends of Job's, people that were his companions in the past. Maybe there are people that he knew very, very well. It sounds like he knew them well. And they knew him. They were people that he had associated with. And now they heard that Job had gone through all these losses, that he lost everything he had, that his life was threatened by the sickness. He was laying in agony and misery. And they hear about this, and the first thing they do is they left what they were doing and they came to be with Job. And that was a big, big situation here. They left home. They left all those things. They made an appointment to meet together. And so these three men came to comfort Job. And they came and sat down with him there and had this appointment to comfort him. So that was a very good thing. It took out of their time. They spent at least a full week with him, perhaps longer afterwards. They seemed to be arguing with him for a long time afterward, too. I don't know how long that took place. But for the first week, anyway, they were with him there in comfort and encouragement. So this was not a small thing. You stop and think about it. Have there ever been a time in your life or my life when we have taken a week out of our existence to go comfort and encourage someone who's going through some difficult times? I don't think I ever have. Perhaps you have, but I mean, that's not a usual thing. That is a big expense. It is a big thing to be able to do that. So this was commendable of them. They left all their homes. We don't know how far away they lived, but it doesn't sound like they were right next door. It wasn't like it was down the street. They left their own place and came, and they spent this time with Job. And we see in verse number 12 that they openly lamented with him. Verse number 12, "And when they lifted up their eyes afar off and knew him not, they lifted up their voice and wept, and they rent every one his mantle and sprinkled dust upon their heads toward heaven." Now, take a look at this. Job was so covered with sores and sickness that they didn't even recognize him. It's pretty sorry. You know, I mean, if we were down sick, you might say, "Oh, you don't look very well today." But we wouldn't say, "Is that you? I can't really even tell. I mean, he was, you know, scriptures say he was covered from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet with these boils that were oozing and yucky. And you know, there's a lot of debate over exactly what it was, whether it was the boils that we would think of that, you know, swell up like a big pimple and pain like crazy until they pop. And I mean, if that's the case, those are extremely painful. And so, but who knows exactly what it was, but it was a terrible sore, and they were all over him. And so much so that they didn't even recognize him. Here's his friends. They see him and said, "Is that really Job? I can't believe it. Doesn't look at all like him." And so they see that and they weep openly. The three of them there weeping over poor Job. The poor guy, look at him. He's so terribly disfigured by this terrible sickness. And they rent their clothes. You know, I mean, if we were grieving with someone, that wouldn't cross my mind. I wouldn't take my shirt and say, "All right, let me rip my shirt." We wouldn't think, but that was part of their custom and culture. And they did that as a sign of their genuine grief. And, I mean, you stop and think about that. I mean, here the guy's got one tunic, and maybe he might have an old one at home, but then he goes and he's grieving with his friend, and he tears his tunic. And he gets home, and his wife says, "What did you do to your tunic? We just got that one. It was new last week, and now you tore it." "Well, I had to, because Job was so bad off." I mean, "Well, I'll have to sew it up, and it'll never be the same again, but that would be your Job tunic." All right. But I mean, it was costly, so it cost him something. It was a time of sorrow and grief. Then it says that they took and sprinkled dust upon their heads toward heaven. So they take handfuls of the dust and throw it up ahead, and they'd fall down on their heads, and so they're all covered with dust. I remember when we were in New Guinea, one of the things that I just dreaded is when someone would die. The mourning and the carrying on was pathetic. I mean, they covered themselves with mud. They looked, you know, so they were all covered with mud, and they were just disgusted looking, and they would wail and cry and scream and carry on and beat the drums for 24 hours because they had to have them in the grave in 24 hours because of the heat and, you know, the humidity and stuff. So for those 24 hours, they would just carry on, and it was a terrible time. But it was sad. But see, in the culture here, in Job's culture, they, you know, they would throw dust in the air, and there was dust all over them. They were, you know, dust in their hair and dirt in their hair, and they got their coat torn, and they're crying and weeping. This was a very sincere show of compassion for Job. They were genuinely, that was a genuine way in their culture, especially, to express their grief. And you know, we read over in the New Testament in Romans 12, in verse number 15, it says, "Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep." And in our culture, you know, we're not going to tear our clothes or throw dirt in the air you know, those kind of things. But we can do this. You know, when someone is grieving, we can go sit with them and, you know, shed some tears with them or just show some genuine compassion for them. And that is a good thing. God says, "Rejoice with them that do rejoice, weep with them that weep." But then we see in verse number 13 that they lamented quietly. Verse number 13, it says, "And so they sat down with him upon the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and none spake a word unto him, for they saw that his grief was great." Now, assuming that we can take this exactly literally as what they're saying here, it sounds like they camped out with him. He was out on the ash pile outside the city, probably near the garbage heap. Flies all over the place. It's hot culture. The flies are terrible. And, you know, at nighttime, it's probably got cold. The sun goes down. It cools off. And so they're sitting out there with him trying to get a little bit of sleep during the night. And Job's moaning and groaning over there. And, you know, admittedly, Job didn't smell too good either. I mean, if they're anywhere near him, you know, somebody that's covered with pus and yuckies all over their body, and he's scraping it off with a scraper, that's not exactly the nicest place to be. And it's the smell and the flies, and it was not a nice time. And these guys, they spent a whole week, they sat out on the ground with him. Now, think about this. Job was not a pauper originally. I mean, he was the most wealthy man in the whole area. And his friends were probably not the down-and-outers that were poor as dirt. They were probably wealthy people, these three guys. They probably were. And here they come to sit with him. They go outside the city. They're sitting near the ash pile, near the garbage dump, and with all of this stench and all of this yucky, and they're there on the ground with him for 7 days and seven nights. Now that's a sacrifice. They show genuine compassion for that poor man Job. And, you know, they sat there quietly during this time. They said not a word to him during that 7 days because they saw that he was in agony and grief. And yet just being there with him was a show of compassion and a genuine show of comfort to Job. You know, the best way that people can help someone who's hurting is to just be with them, often saying little or nothing to them, just letting them know that you care. And a lot of times we want to just say something to try to be a comfort to them, but truthfully, some of the best things we can do is say nothing. Just be there with them. Let them know that we care. And we're here for you. And so these three men, for a whole week, sitting outside on the ground, evidently camping out there with him near the garbage dump, with all the stench and all the coldness at night and all the moisture in the night and all that. It was not a pleasant time. And these three men went through some really difficult times for that week, trying to be a comfort to Job. And so, truthfully, these three verses describe an excellent example of genuine friends that showed genuine comfort. I'm not sure what happened after this, but it kind of turned. And the rest of the book of Job shows the other side of them. But this is a great example as we start out. And then you turn to chapter 3, and we find Job's lamentation. So these three men sat there. Perhaps my guess is, I can't prove it, but my guess is that chapter 3 was some of the moaning and groanings that he expressed to them during that week. And they didn't make any comment during that week. They just sat there and listened and watched him and cried over him and felt sorry for him and perhaps prayed for him. I don't know. But Job starts out in verse number 1 of chapter 3 with his lamentation. And after this, opened Job his mouth and cursed his day. His day referring to his birthday. In Warren Wiersbe's words, he said, when you're hurting, you may say and do a lot of things that you will later regret. Job's suffering was so great that he forgot the blessings that he had with his family and had enjoyed for so many years. And that is true. You know, you stop and think about times when you've been really down and discouraged or sick or grieving. And sometimes things come out of our mouths that we're not thinking clearly. We're not doing what is right. Another commentator, Roy Zook, added this note. He said, Job did not curse God, as Satan predicted, nor did he contemplate suicide. He laments his misery, but does not complain of injustice or lament his integrity. So he's not blaming God. He's not saying, why did I, you know, his wife said, just curse God and die and forget about your integrity. He didn't do that. He didn't listen to that. He didn't contemplate suicide. He wasn't saying, all right, I'm so miserable. And he was. He was extremely miserable. As we read through this chapter, you'll see he was just absolutely terribly miserable. But he didn't say, all right, I'm going to kill myself. This is enough. He didn't do that. He left all that in God's hands. Now, he starts out in verses 1 to 10 saying that he wished he had never been born. Verse number 2, and Job spake and said, let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a man-child conceived. Right now, as we stop and think about this, he says, even my conception, when I was conceived, I wish that never would have happened. I wish that would not have existed. I would have been better off if I never would have started life. But you know, one of the things that's interesting, even Job, way back then, understood clearly things that people today can't seem to get through their head. And that is that life begins at conception. Job knew that clearly. And he expressed that even in his grief of these troubles that were burdening him. And then Job goes on in verse 4, "Let the day be darkness, and let not God regard it from above, neither let the light shine upon it." See, he's still talking about his birthday. "Let darkness and the shadow of death stain it. Let the cloud dwell upon it. Let blackness of the day terrify it. As for the night, let darkness seize upon it. Let it not be joined unto the days of the year. Let it not come to the number of the months." So Job's saying, I wish it didn't even exist in the calendar. I wish my birthday didn't even, you know, you couldn't find a place on the calendar to put my birthday. I didn't exist. It never happened. It was just, I wish it would have been that I never would have been there at all. That would have been far better for me. And he goes on and he says, "Lo, let the night be solitary. Let no joyful voice come therein. Let them curse the day who are ready to raise up their mourning." Now, it's interesting. I challenge you, take a Bible software or your tablet, look up the word mourning. It's interesting. It's the word Leviathan. That's interesting. I say, why would Leviathan? The idea here is, he said he wished his birthday had been a terrible day like the one when a fool stirs up the Leviathan. Now, the Leviathan was one of those fearless dinosaurs that they were terrified of. And if anybody was stupid enough to stir up the Leviathan, you're asking for trouble, because that guy will tear you to shreds. And Job said, I wish my day was like that. It was just one of those terrible days that I never would have existed, that it would have been, I would have been destroyed. And then he said, let the stars of the twilight thereof be dark. Let it be for, look for the light, but have none. Neither let it see the dawning of the day, because it shut up not up the doors of my mother's womb and hid sorrow from mine eyes. Job, again, he's just saying, I wish that I never would have been born. I wish I never would have been born. I am so miserable. And, you know, you stop and think about that. Days had gone by now. They'd been mourning with him for 7 days. We don't know how long he'd been sick before they got there. I mean, they had to hear about it before they could get there. So obviously, and they came from some distance, so he'd been sick for a number of days prior to that. He's miserably sick. And you know, there's been times when we've been sick, and maybe sick with the flu or sick with someone else, and it just doesn't seem to go away, and you just say, oh, when's it going to quit? But Job was in pain from head to toe, scraping all the yuck off, and he was miserable. It was a terrible existence. And Job says, I just can't stand this. I wish that I never would have ever been born. It would have been better. And then he goes on in verses 11 to 19, and he says, I wish I had died at birth. Right, if I was going to be born, I wish I would have died when I was born. The moment I came out, I wish I would have been dead. He starts out with four why questions. Verse 11, why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why did the knees prevent me? Why the breasts that I should suck? So he's asking four questions here. Right? So why didn't I die when I came out of the womb? Why didn't I give up the ghost as soon as I came out of my mother's belly? Why didn't I die right then and there, be over with? Then he says, talks about the knees preventing me or holding me. The idea here is they would lay the babe on their mother's knees shortly after it was born. And, you know, for her to, you know, see the babe. And, you know, that's the first thing mom wants to do, you know, see her babe. And so he says, why did they do that? Why did I suck from my mother's breast? Why didn't they just say he's dead? Sorry, Mom, he died. He says, that would have been far better off. I wish I would have been born dead. And verse 13, for now should I have lain still, been quiet. I should have slept. Then had I been at rest with kings and counselors of the earth, which built desolate places for themselves, or with princes that had gold, who filled their houses with silver, or had as a hidden untimely birth, I had been not been as infants which never saw light. All right, so here, when he talks about this hidden untimely birth, he's talking about a miscarriage. All right? He was in his mom's womb, but he didn't make it through. And he died prematurely, was born dead. He said, that would have been far better off. I don't like the fact that I was born because this is miserable. I'm in agony and I can't get out of it. And he probably was saying, God, why don't you take me? But God wouldn't do that. All right? So he's in miserable and he's in agony. Verse 17, and there the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary be at rest, and the prisoners are at rest together, and they hear not the voices of the oppressor. The small and the great are there, and the servant is free from his master. All right, so he's saying, in the grave at least, I'd be at peace and quiet and stillness if I was dead. All right, now Job seems to indicate here that he understands that the place of the dead, Sheol, as it was in the Old Testament, was a place that had two compartments. I mean, he wasn't saying, I wish I would go to hell with all the people that are suffering and dying. He didn't say that at all. He didn't indicate that at all. He seemed like it was a good place. But we know that wicked people, certainly, when they died, they went to a place of suffering. But the godly or the righteous went to a place that was not suffering. So Sheol, we believe, had two compartments to it. Paradise and Hades or hell. And so Job seems to have understood that way back in those days as well. Now, he's reaching out. He says, I wish I would have died. It would have been better off that I did. You know, by this, Job seems to understand all this, and he's just grieving over this difficult situation he's in. But then we see in verses 20 to 26 that he wishes that he would just die now. Look at verse number 20. Which, wherefore, is the light given to him that is in misery, and life unto the bitter in soul, which long for death, but it cometh not, and dig for it more than it hid treasures. Now get the picture here. He says, there's life still, light still given to me. I don't want light anymore. And life is bitter to my soul. I wish it wasn't there. I wish I didn't have life anymore. And I long for death, but it won't come. And I dig for it like for hid treasures. He says, I'm trying to find what can, you know, he wasn't contemplating suicide here. He was saying, I just don't want this life anymore. I am weary of life. It hurts. I'm in agony. I'm miserable. I just want to die. And verse 22, which rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they find the grave. Why is light given unto a man whose way is hid and to and whom God hath hedged in? And notice that. He said, God has hedged me in. What was he saying here? He says, I want to escape this life. I want to go. I want to die. But God has hedged me in. Now, what did God tell Satan he could do? He said, you can do anything you want to him, but you cannot take his life. And Job seemed to recognize this, that God had put a hedge or a fence around his life. He said, you can do anything you want to him. And Job is suffering in all this. But Job, the very thing that Job wished would go away is his life. He said, I just want to die. And he says, God won't let me. He's got me hedged in. He won't let me die. Now, that's an important thing for us to remember, that even when we're miserable and we feel terrible, God is still in control of life. And it is never right for us to take our life. You know, people that get very depressed and discouraged, and sometimes they take their life, or there's euthanasia, and they're just trying to end it all because it's too miserable. And yet we just need to say, God, it's in your hands. Help me through this. Give me grace to endure this. It's not nice. It's miserable. But for some reason, God, you've had me hedged in here, and you're keeping me alive, and that's okay. You just keep doing that, but I'm ready to go when you're ready to call me. All right? And so Job was miserable, but he saw that God hedged him in. Verse 24, for my sighing cometh before I eat, and my roaring roarings are poured out like water. All right, so here he's just saying the sighing before he eats, whether he's just feeling miserable, whether he's not feeling hungry anymore, or when he eats, it's just gross because everything stinks and it's a miserable life, and he probably wasn't very hungry. He's probably getting dehydrated and miserable, feeling even more. And he says, my roarings pour out like water. I'm groaning, I'm moaning, I'm feeling miserable, and this is not a nice life. Verse 25, for the thing which I greatly feared has come upon me, and that which I was afraid of has come upon me. Job says, when I was living in prosperity and God was blessing me, I would often think, what would happen if God stopped blessing me? What would happen if God took away all these blessings of mine? I wonder if that will ever happen. I hope it won't. I don't want to lose my kids. I don't want to lose my possessions. I don't treasure them as far as, you know, worshiping them, but I'm glad that God has been good to me. But what, you know, God, it's, remember what Job first said? He said, God gave and God taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And Job had that fear in his heart that God has given me all this stuff and God could just take it all away from me. And you know, we think about our world today. We live in a situation where we have things pretty good. We live in a very comfortable situation for the most part. But things are not looking real good on our world. And we could say, well, God wouldn't let real bad stuff happen to us, certainly. We wouldn't end up in a World War III. We wouldn't end up living in hideouts and bunkers. And, you know, that wouldn't happen to us. But it could. It could. And, you know, God may let that happen. We don't know. But here Job said, I feared that the day would come. And here it has come upon me. And I am absolutely miserable. And I just want to die. I just want to die. I don't want to live anymore. I want to be free from this. And he ends in verse 26. I was not in safety, neither had I rest, neither was I quiet, yet trouble came. All this trouble came upon me. He says, I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything to deserve it. As far as I know, there's nothing between me and God. And yet God has allowed all this. Thomas Constable in his commentary says, many people reach the same level of strata of grief that Job did. They long to die, but not to contemplate suicide. The pressure of pain squeezes out the memories of past pleasure. Present agony becomes so overwhelming that they cannot see hope beyond it. And you know, there are people in our world like that today that are suffering to that degree. Maybe they're struggling on their deathbed with cancer or some other painful disease. And they say, I just want to die. And yet, death is in the hands of God. And we must leave it in the hands of God. And you know, in our hearts, you know, our fleshly mind can sometimes sympathize with the euthanasia idea that just let the poor person get out of their misery. But that's God's prerogative, not ours. And we must leave it in God's hands. We have no right to take a life or take our own life. Another commentator stated, only those godly people who relish release from life's woes through the gate of death can fully appreciate Job's mournful wail. Job was absolutely miserable. And he just said, God, I just want to die. I wish I never would have been born. But since I was born, I wish I would have died when I was first born. I wouldn't have had to go through all this. But now I've lived and I've gone through all this. And now I just wish I could die. But God's hedged me in and he won't let me die. Job was suffering. It was a difficult time. And you know, there may be times in our lives where we feel in a similar way. It's not a pleasant thing, nothing that we look forward to. But though Job was suffering in these terrible ways, his suffering was affecting his feelings and stretching his emotions to their limits. But yet he had not lost faith in God. And that's the thing we need to remember. I read things like this, and I'll be honest, it makes me quake a bit. Because I know me. I don't like to suffer. I don't like pain. I'm a sissy when it comes to that stuff. And if I end up on my deathbed in agony and pain, it's going to be hard to rejoice in the Lord always. But we've got to be prepared for those kind of things. Because God knows what He wants us to do and what He will allow us to go through. Job did not curse God. He did not blame God in any sinful way. Job remained true to God. He was a great example to us. And so when his friends left that good example to us as well, we can learn from their friends, we can learn from Job some things that can be helpful to us, and that is that, you know, when a friend or a loved one is suffering, we need to lament with them, grieve with them, mourn with them. We need to spend time with those grieving people. It's not a very pleasant thing to just sit down with someone who's moaning and groaning, and maybe they don't smell so good. They haven't bathed. Maybe they're just, their situation is not a very pleasant situation, but they need someone to just be there with them. That's what God's calling us to do. It's not an easy thing to just sit quietly with them, perhaps share some Bible promises with them. The last thing we'd want to do is, God's just bringing punishment on you for what you did. You shouldn't have done that. No, don't be like Job's friends were. They become. But we need to be like they were now, where they just sat quietly, comforted, encouraged, cheered him the best that they could. And when we're going through that suffering time, like Job, we may long for relief from the suffering, but we can't get angry with God. It's not right. It's not right to blame God. It's certainly never right to take our own life. That's never God's will. God is fully capable of taking us when He hits His time. I think that it's a time where we should spend more time in prayer and meditation. But sometimes, you know, when you're feeling absolutely miserable, it's hard to even concentrate on the Scriptures. It's hard to even pray when you're just feeling absolutely wretched. It's hard. But we need to work at that, because that was what will keep us sane and keep us focused on the right way. And depend upon the Lord for the strength that we need to see to get through to the end. God will take care if we'll lean on Him. And so I hope that we can learn some things here from Job and his friends that can help us both in comforting our others and also in dealing with things that we will face ourselves. It's not easy. None of this is easy. It certainly wasn't easy for Job's three friends to spend a whole week of their existence plus the other, how much other time they did, but at least a whole week sitting there outside on the ground in the weather, in the stench, in this heat of the day, to be there to be a comfort to Job. That was a sacrifice. And then Job expresses his deep grief, and we can learn from both. So let's just ask God to help us to do what's right, both toward others, toward God, when we suffer and go through difficult times.